Welcome to the podcast series for AJP Heart and Circulatory Physiology. I'm your host, Kara Hansel-Kehan. Today, we'll discuss the article by Sulkin et al. Titled, Mitochondrial Depolarization and Electrophysiological Changes During Ischemia in the Rabbit and Human Heart. This article published online August 15, 2014. My guests today are Associate Editor Gary Lopeshuk, Lead author Matthew Sulkin, and expert Elaine Wan. Let's get started.
Thank you, Kara. This is Gary Lopeshuk, and I'd like to start this podcast that will discuss the excellent article by Matt Sulkin and colleagues on mitochondrial depolarization and electrophysiological changes during ischemia in the rat and human heart. We all know that ventricular arrhythmias are important complication associated with ischemia reperfusion. We also know the mitochondria are also very important mediators of ischemic injury. And the question, though, is whether the mitochondrial membrane potential plays a role in ischemic injury. And part of the problems associated with addressing this is having some of the techniques to look directly at the mitochondrial membrane potential during ischemia reperfusion. And this article provides some exciting new techniques to do that, and I'd like to ask Matt if he would mind summarizing the key findings of the paper.
Great. Thank you, Gary. This paper, we describe a combination of two different imaging techniques, traditional optical mapping of transmembrane potential plus mitochondrial membrane potential imaging. And what we found using this technique is that mitochondrial potential does not actively propagate as a unidirectional wave across the myocardium. This was shown previously by other investigators. Secondly, we discovered that mitochondrial depolarization is sporadic and reversible. Mitochondrial depolarization is associated with action potential shortening, but not necessarily with conduction velocity slowing. And lastly, the origin of focal arrhythmias is not related to mitochondrial depolarization.
Okay, thank you, Matt. Elaine, would you like to provide your views of the paper?
Yes, well, thank you very much, Gary and Matt. Definitely a very interesting paper. One, definitely optical mapping is a very challenging technique that the Efimov lab has obviously spearheaded. And this is a very novel paper on imaging both the mitochondrial depolarization along with the electrical action potential, which I found to be very innovative and shedding to new light for imaging of inner mitochondrial membrane potential. I think it brings into question, you know, the previous papers which tried to attempt to look at whether or not there is a correlation. I think what is the most innovative finding of this paper was that really they did not find a direct correlation between the inner mitochondrial membrane potential with the focal depolarization in the ischemia reperfusion arrhythmias.
Okay, thanks, Elaine. Do you have any questions you'd like to ask Matt concerning the paper?
Yes. I actually visited the Efimov lab a couple of months ago to be an amateur optical mapper myself, and it is definitely a very challenging technique that requires a lot of practice and experience. And I think there are different laboratory groups worldwide that have tried their hand at just optically mapping arrhythmias, and I think this paper is very unique because they are mapping the inner mitochondrial membrane potential. And Matt, I think you'd be good as an expert on this. What do you think are the differences between traditional imaging of action potentials and the mitochondrial imaging?
That's a great question, Elaine. Optical mapping, like you said, is a very challenging technique. First, you need to understand how the fluorescent signals are created. How does the dye-light interaction create optical action potentials and give also a metabolic signal, which is what I was interested in looking at as well. The second part to it is understanding your equipment. You're using light sources. You're using high-speed cameras. Third, you're using, most cases, a Langendorf setup, and a lot of people would do this on mouse hearts, and it's very challenging. Fourth is the signal processing and analysis side, and I think this is what catches up with most people, is how do you actually analyze your data? What are the signal processing tools that you should actually use with optical mapping? There's a great paper that was put out by Jacob Loeffner, and I believe it's in 2012 in AJP, that describes the correct way to process your signals. And lastly comes the interpretation of your data, which can sometimes be confusing. So these are all reasons why optical mapping is a very challenging technique. Specifically towards your question, traditional optical mapping of action potentials, you're looking at a fractional change in fluorescence. So you load your heart with dye, the heart will take up this dye, and you'll have a baseline fluorescence of, let's say, 2,000 fluorescence units. The fluorescence then will increase to, let's say, 3,000 units during the upstroke, and then during repolarization, go back down to 2,000 units. You're looking at this fractional change of fluorescence, and that's equivalent to an action potential. In metabolic imaging, you're actually looking and monitoring changes in baseline fluorescence. So you start off, let's say, again, at 2,000 fluorescence units, and if you add cyanide or if you induce ischemia, you're looking at changes from this baseline. So the two signals come from two different sources, and it makes it very complicated. So really understanding where your signals come from and how they are created is very important.
Okay, thank you, Matt. Lane, do you have any other questions?
I think something that probably Gary and I are both interested in is, as a clinical cardiologist and clinical cardiac electrophysiologist, you know, the cardiac remodeling that happens in heart failure is very interesting. The heart definitely becomes more globular. And one of the key points of your finding that differentiates your research, Matt, from the other previous lab is that you highlight that the geometry of the heart in the model of ischemia is very important, like whether or not there's shrinkage and different perfusion pressures. Do you think that in heart failure, where the heart is more globular and hypokinetic, how does this change the imaging in these hearts of, one, animals, and also these human hearts that you're imaging?
That's a great question. So this technology can be used beyond studying just ischemia. I would recommend using it in experiments where tissue shape is maintained. So when your tissue shrinks, you're going to have more fluorophores, more mitochondria per pixel, and this is going to artificially increase your fluorescence intensity. So this can definitely be used in heart failure models. Just you had to make sure that your heart doesn't change shape or move during the experiment. So it's very sensitive to that, and it's very important to maintain the heart shape.
Okay, thank you, Matt. So, you know, using this very exciting technology, your data, I think, convincingly shows that mitochondrial depolarization isn't directly associated with ischemia-induced arrhythmias. Do you believe this is sort of generalized to all arrhythmias, or are there other forms of arrhythmias that aren't ischemic-induced that potentially you could have a role of the mitochondrial membrane potential in mediating?
So for ischemia and acute ischemia, you have functional reentry, and you had to create the underlying substrates to initiate an arrhythmia. And for a long time, it was thought that mitochondria could be directly connected to it. And the data that we show, there's not this direct connection. But I want to make sure that I state that I do believe metabolism is important in the role of creating these arrhythmia substrates. Really comes down to the amount of ADP in your cytosol and the connection between the electrophysiology and this ADP pool is the KTP channel. And once this channel is open, you're going to increase the amount of outward potassium current, and this leads to action potential duration shortening, depolarization of the membrane potential, which results in reduction excitability and conduction block. And these are all important for arrhythmia substrate mechanisms. So it's not as simple as we always like to think, and I think the mitochondria maybe are worsening the ATP pool in the cytosol. So I do think metabolism plays an important role in ischemia-induced arrhythmias, and possibly the mitochondrial potential plays roles in other types of arrhythmias as well. I'm interested in to see maybe they play a role in the maintenance of arrhythmias, such as arrhythmias that have a stable rotor. I'd love to take a look and see how mitochondria functioning is going on during those cases, but it's a very important question and something that we need to dig into a little deeper.
Thank you, Matt, and I'd also like to thank Elaine for her interesting input into this, and it's clear that we have a very poor understanding of the relationship between mitochondrial metabolism and the mitochondrial membrane potential, and I think this novel technology will help us dissect this out, and I would like to congratulate Matt Sulkin and his colleagues for an excellent paper.
You've been listening to an AJP Heart and Circ podcast. For more podcasts, visit us online at ajpheart.physiology.org. Thank you.